Hey, Tim.
Hey, Dan.
I have a joke for you.
Oh, good.
My performance on the golf course this morning.
Yeah.
It was terrible. It was terrible.
It was no good.
I wish I was better at sports.
That's the most I've laughed at one of your jokes in months, I'd say. That's good.
Let's play the intro, shall we?
Hi, this is Tim. This is just a heads up that all the advice you're hearing in this podcast is general in nature. If you want something more specific, then feel free to contact us.
Drunk accountant, drunk accountant, drunk, drunk, to drunk accountant, drunk accountant, drunk accountant, drunk, drunk, to drunk accountant, drunk accountant, drunk, drunk, to drunk again, drunk accountant.
Hi, and welcome to the Two Drunk Accountants podcast.
That was a really weird intro.
Yeah, I know. I just went full I don't know, commercial radio.
Yeah. Hi, welcome to 2GB. This is Tim. Tim in the mornings.
I'm Tim.
I'm Dan.
And we're here with Simon Harris, who is the founder of the Academy. And Si, I've known you for a very long time. I'd say over 10 years. So it's great to have you on the podcast. And you're a business coach from way back. And we're going to talk about selling businesses today.
Correct. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We need to come up with some radio names for all of this. Like, you're obviously T-Bone.
T-Bone.
I can be D-Dog or the Big Dog.
The Big Dog.
Si, what would your like commercial radio name be? Because this is T-Bone and the Big Dog with special guests.
And Big Si. Big Si.
Big Si. Yeah.
I like that. Like.
Well, I was on a chairlift once at Threadbow. And there were four people, myself and my best mate, Simon. So there's two for a start.
Yeah.
And you know how you lean over and you say, hey, where are you from? They introduce themselves and he was a Simon and his mate was a Simon. There were four Simons sitting on this chair. So we just nicknamed ourselves. I became Big Si, my mate's Little Si because he's like 5'10". I'm 6'4". And we went down in middle and almost average. So we had, four nicknames on the day. So that kind of Big Si stuck.
That's actually... That's hit hard for me. You're 6'4". I did not know that. Yeah. So we've done a lot of video calls and phone calls, but we've never met in person. You're 6'4".
Yeah, I think I've been into your office once in the last 22 years.
it's actually changed a lot.
You would recognize it.
What you're looking at right now is the brand new pod studio area, recently built, first real podcast. We're in here together.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, Si?
Wow.
Big Si, sorry.
It's hard to get a perspective apart from the painted brick walls. I do like the little neon behind you. That's good. That's cool.
Yeah.
Got the neon. Cool. Got the Dan bobblehead.
Yep.
Further up here, we've actually got an AI picture of us in a frame. You can't see that one yet. A bit wider screen, you'll see that one.
Bring all this in. But yeah,
this is the debut.
Is it?
We haven't done one together here, I don't think.
Yeah, true. It really is. Yeah. There you go. That's exciting. So,
and dating back right to the 4th of May 2018 on your first episode. So you've come a long way, right?
Well, nice. It took us 5 years to set up a permanent recording spot in the office. Maybe that's actually closer to 6. Oh, my God.
Good things take time, right?
We've been busy in that time. But this is well, you know, not that Dan and I want to sell our business side, but this is a good segue. If you want to prepare your business to exit.
Yep.
So it's not just selling, it's to exit as well.
It's to exit.
Imagine our podcast, Dan, if we weren't so busy doing accounting work in the last 6 years.
Yeah, it could have been huge.
Huge.
All right, well, before we get too far into it, Tim.
What is the Tim and Dan?
Tim, how was your week? What have you been up to?
Very good.
Apart from pumping golf.
Yeah, I'm going to say like the highlight was definitely winning golf this morning. And we played like a pairs Ambrose. So Harvey from our team was on my team. And Nick, our mortgage broker, was on Dan's team.
Yep.
And we came out victorious, Tim and Harvey, which is why I left the golf shirt on for the recording today.
Yeah. Well, I've took mine off as quick as possible, but Nick and I won the previous times. So now we won all.
Yeah, we are one all. We've got to do a best of three.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little bit upset because it was looking like we may have drawn coming into that last hole.
I know.
And if we did, we decided early on that it's going to be a rock-off to determine who wins the day. And that's really where I shine on the golf course. is the rock off.
So coming back to the joke, Dan, yeah, in the beginning, that actually, when we were playing the intro, I was like, that is hilarious, because you also played tennis for the first time with your girlfriend last night, are you?
I did, yeah.
And
yeah.
And you lost as well.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I've lost a lot of games this week. But that's fine. That's fine. So, I am who I am.
Yeah. I don't know. How did that make you feel for the first time playing golf with your girlfriend and tennis, sorry, and she's pantsed you?
Fine. I felt totally fine about it. I'm good at many things. You know, I'm great at podcasting, some would argue. I'm a great accountant. I'm great at music, many musical instruments.
You are very good at music.
Yeah, I love a laugh.
You're a funny guy.
Sports, not high up there on sports. Ping pong. Great.
Not your thing.
Yeah. I'm an okay swimmer.
All right. Now we're reaching.
But it's definitely a reach. Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure your girlfriend can also beat you at golf.
Yeah. Too. No, she's good at both those things.
There you go. I love that. Personally, I think you've picked a winner there.
Yeah. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, she certainly wins. Yeah.
There we go.
What have you been?
That's me. That's my update. Just golf. Yeah. What about you guys? Anything interesting happening?
Si, what have you been up to?
I spent the day with Robert Kiyosaki yesterday.
What? Rich Dad Poor Dad?
Yeah, Rich Dad Poor Dad. Yeah.
That's awesome. Wow. What was that like?
Just me and 1,500 of my closest friends.
That's classic. There you go. I'm a big fan. I mean, I listened to his book in Blinkist version, but Rich Dad Poor Dad was very good. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, yeah. Fascinating day. Fascinating man. He's getting on a bit. He's 77. He shuffles around a bit, but he's just some of his numbers that he produced in his life, what he's done is just insane. Absolutely insane.
That's really cool. Did you take away any nuggets of wisdom?
Yeah, you can't tax debt. So he carries $1.2 billion in debt, and they can't tax a cent of it. And how to live life tax free? That was interesting.
Wow.
I mean, relevant to this podcast, I guess, is tax is a big issue, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can't tax debt. So debt's actually, and they teach us at school is to, you know, be a good boy, go to school, get university, pay your taxes. Get a house, pay your mortgage off, and then you're good. And that's the poor dad version. The rich dad version is live in debt and it's fine within your means, of course. But
yeah.
And then he drops, you know, his three things he invests in: gold, Bitcoin, and silver. Not necessarily in that order. And he goes, "Oh, I've got a few coins. I think I've got 70 at the last count." I'm going, "Okay."
Wow.
70 Bitcoin. I think on last check we're back up close to 100 grand again per coin, weren't they? Like
107 off something this morning. It's just dropped a bit off this morning, but 107 or 70,000 US each.
You know, it sounds great now. 6 months ago, though,
he'd
lost a lot of money on those Bitcoins, but sounds good right now.
Wow.
Well, he started buying at 6,000 a piece, so he's been in front for a while now.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I think that's the main takeaway from him, his life's work, Rich Dad Poor Dad, it's just to do something, and it's to take a risk. I forget the word that he uses, but he's basically saying, like, have some gumption, like take a risk. He uses a different word, but I forget what it is. That's awesome. There you go. The debt thing is interesting. I feel like that's a bit of a departure from his book because he doesn't think about debt as a liability. He thinks about a home loan for your main residence as a liability or a car loan as a liability. Whereas something that can produce you income, that's an asset.
Yeah.
Correct.
So they can't tax debt, definitely. But it's also not a tax deduction if you're making big profits off an asset and you still got to pay that debt down. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The accounting brain definitely kicks in there a little bit and questions that statement. But look, you know, I definitely think there's smarter ways to structure your investments and your assets, and that's clear. So
Cool.
Well, that's a good one.
That's cooler than me being beat in all sports and Tim winning in all sports.
It's a little bit more interesting. Yeah, Robert Kiyosaki. Yeah. That's very cool.
All right. Well, why don't we move on?
When his girlfriend 1.0 become wife 1.0?
What was that?
When does girlfriend 2.0 become wife 1.0?
You're on the spot here, dude.
That's just, oof.
Look, life's short, Dan. That's all I'm going to say. You know, maybe you should make the wedding happen sooner or later. You can take that statement, you know, either way. Life's short.
I'm going to be, I'm going to respectfully take these comments just with notice. Thank you. Yeah.
Simon, how many kids do you have? You've got, from memory, you've got four or five?
Five.
Can't remember. There you go. So Dan, get to work. Simon's got five kids. All right.
You've got one.
I know. I started off with one. Yeah. I don't know how Simon's here. He's got like clothing on. He looks semi-normal and well slept.
I have a superhuman wife.
Okay.
Who just holds it all together. She is incredible. I've said in jest, but actually in truth, I want to come back in my next life as one of her children.
That's awesome.
That's funny. That's very funny.
There you go.
All right, well, let's move on to the business update, shall we? Business update today is sponsored by Katz Accountants. Thank you, Katz Accountants, for sponsoring the business update.
Yes, I just realized I have the ABC article on my phone, which is recording right there, but I can pretty much remember what it says.
What's the gist?
This is a throwback to a previous Tidus tip, I believe.
Okay.
It is all about surcharges when paying by card. So think you're going out buying a meal at the pub or you're at Aldi and you pay by tap and pay. And there's these sneaky surcharges just slipping their way in onto the top of your bill.
Yep.
And it could just be 1%, but that is adding up to be a huge amount. So we talked about this months ago.
Yep.
And the ABC threw out an article last week, which was saying it's actually coming under the microscope of the government, and big banks are being told that they need to do better when it comes to merchant fees, because that's obviously why businesses are passing on a surcharge, because they're getting charged a fee by their bank to take that transaction.
Yep.
And it's amounting to $1 billion a year.
Oof.
And that's being passed on through businesses to the end
to the bank
buyer, which when you look at that in Australia, that's like $200 to $400 per person, which in this environment is a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
Well, you've been a big cash advocate for a long time, Tim. Like, you're like anti-card, don't want to, you know, don't use direct debit. I want to pay in cash and everything.
Simon likes that.
Like, I often hear you have conversations with our clients when they're leaving. They're like, oh, how much do we owe? It's like, oh, just, I'll send you a text. Just like drop some cash off.
Drop some cash off. Yeah.
That's been your whole deal for ages, right?
Yeah. I'm known as the king of cash on the Central Coast.
But it's all just because of the surcharges. that's it. You're not, you declare all
well,
that.
Maybe you have to start doing that. And that was the whole argument when we talked about this previously. It's like the administration for a business to actually go bank cash is more costly than receiving an FPOS payment or a tap and pay payment on their FPOS terminal. So it's not making sense. Really.
I have a thought that the more I think about it, it doesn't add up literally. But when you're paying cash, and something costs $12.98, you pay $13. It's 2 cents, right?
Yeah, well, that's true.
They're rounding up.
This is true.
They're taking a little 2 cent surcharge in every little cash transaction you're doing. Now, how often does it round up versus rounding down? You'd assume it's an equal distribution.
You would.
Assuming prices are like that.
You would.
But are most people pricing it at 98 or 99 cents instead of 92 cents? Someone, I think they would.
Someone's definitely done some research into this.
There's a book that I read called Humble Pie. It's all about maths. One of it was how much you save by paying in cash when it rounds down and card when it rounds up.
Oh, that's classic. That is so good.
But that just made me think, I wonder if you do use cash all the time, like I think the surcharges would still be more because they're usually like more than 2 cents. Just something to think about.
That is something to think about. Simon, so you're a fan of the cash? I saw your reaction there, a couple of thumbs up. Yes.
Yeah, I think if you play out the cashless society, it's not good, right? it's Big Brother. It's happening in China as we speak.
They've gotten rid of cash.
The special credit scoring system. If we went cashless and there was a central bank digital currency, for example, that got released, and Tim hadn't paid his taxes. I mean, that would be odd for a start. but then the control on that would say, well, let's let him. He can't spend money on anything but food, education, and health. That's it. Done. We'll lock him down. Cash is anonymous. Look, I get the whole. I get the awkwardness of having to deal with cash and go to the bank as a business.
Yeah.
But there's an awful lot of freedom that enables one in to be able to not be tracked, not be traced, just spend it wherever you like. Mm. And the worst case scenario is we end up with China with a social credit scoring system and you being limited as to where and what you can buy with your money.
I believe there should be some line in the sand around the sharing of the data that gets, you know, what you're spending on, where the bank shouldn't just be able to freely give that to the government and all that information. However, the argument, this is a counter side, because I've heard this argument before, that cash is anonymous, it lets you do what you want, you know, you don't go down the rabbit hole like you're talking about. But if everyone just did the right thing, why is that a problem? People want to use cash because they want to cheat the system.
Yeah, I guess what's
change
size.
The rules if you don't want
you
it.
You could say the same about Bitcoin. You could say exactly the same about Bitcoin.
You could, absolutely.
Yep.
I guess what Sai's saying as well is then if something were to... That's that fear of the slippery slope. The government makes a change and then there's too much power and then all of a sudden the right thing from today is not the right thing in the future.
Correct.
But I would say we have a social... rating system already in Australia and America and the Western world. It's called TikTok. That came out of China too, didn't it? There you go.
Yep.
Well
done, Tim.
Very good. All right. Well,
that's an interesting article. The other business update this week, there's been a report released. Commission did a report around the funding of aged care into the future.
Oh.
And how there's a disparity kind of going on between the, you know, we've spoken about this on the podcast before. We have an aging population. Mm. The elderly, you know, cohort, there's going to be much more of them coming out, which means they rely more heavily on the people producing income at the moment than ever before.
Yeah.
So they're questioning, well, how do we keep funding that? Because if we keep just adding more tax to the income producing people, that's not fair nor equitable. So a lot of people were thinking it was going to be a levy, which would just be taxing everyone's incomes. Like it's a 1% aged care levy or something like that.
Yep.
But instead they came out and said a whole bunch of other things, including they should be means tested and use their assets to fund their retirement instead of tax.
Wow.
I thought that was interesting. So I imagine that's not going to be popular amongst a large cohort of people, but also adds more into that debate that we were talking about recently around what should be taxed and how our current tax system works and you know, whether or not change is quite necessary and what's going to happen. So just further little tidbits.
Yeah, and that's not just a problem in Australia. That's a problem in so many countries. I mean, I'm not attacking China here. It's just on the brain, but they've got an aging population as well. The world, to a large extent, does have an aging population for a lot of the developed countries.
People are living longer.
It's a serious issue, and governments are all going to attack this a different way. It's just going to be interesting to see how we land in Australia, where we don't have things like death taxes like other countries. So, it's definitely...
We do.
we do.
What's our inheritance
tax? It's currently rated at zero.
Yeah.
So it's sitting there ready to go. This is absolutely true. Right? The death tax is sitting there ready to go. It's just rated at zero currently. They can implement it anytime they want.
So we have a 0% inheritance or death tax, and it's just sitting there at nothing.
That's interesting, actually. We should look into that. That's something we should know, I feel. Is there a death tax written into the legislation already?
Have you ever read the legislate, like the Income Tax Act, Tim?
Parts, obviously. Jeez.
I have as well.
The magic number is 2.1, right? So Elon Musk did a big thing about this not long ago. So if your birth rate is greater than 2.1, you're going to have a growing population that'll sustain the older. If it's below 2, then you're in trouble because the population gets older. There's not enough replacement people to come in to pay the taxes to pay for the healthcare system.
Yeah.
So 2.1 is our magic number. That's why Costello in the 80s or 90s, you know, one for your mum, one for dad, one for the country.
Out of the three of us then, we're sitting on an average of two, so we're struggling. we're one short. Tim, do you mind just having a second? Because then we're up.
Mate, I can't afford childcare. It's so expensive. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's a really interesting thing. And yeah, in China, this is what I was listening to this on News Daily, ABC News Daily. They are incentivizing having more kids with like tax incentives. So is that the answer?
Baby bonus.
Baby bonus. Yeah.
Yeah, I got rich off that.
I think I was just starting out working as an accountant when that baby bonus was around, Simon. So I do remember you having a lot of kids at that time.
Yeah. All right. Tim, tight ass tip.
Tight ass tip.
Is it not having a baby?
No.
I'm saving heaps.
No, it relates to something that happens when you do have a baby, which is, when they get old enough to go to daycare, you get gastro. And I bought some Hydralyte Icy Pulse.
Yep.
They were like $15 for like a dollar a pop. They're so expensive. And I was speaking to a client, so they had a great tip for me. Make your own Hydralyte Icy Pulse.
Okay, so what are you putting in water?
They said, and I didn't go fact check this, but they said
it's salts and things.
Virtually the same thing if you use apple juice and water and mix those together and freeze them.
This was a reputable source.
This is a client who has two kids who are toddlers. They're getting sick a lot.
Both alive.
They are both alive. They get sick a lot.
Yeah.
Look, I think even if it doesn't do exactly the same thing as the Hydralyte,
it's still adding fluid in.
It's a bit sweet.
Yeah.
It's got fluid. And you're not like swallowing a large amount, which means, you know, you're not going to vomit potentially.
I'm also very pretty surprised, unless you just didn't share with me the details, that you didn't get gastro.
I didn't get it. I know.
Good on you for that. You're like stomach of steel. That's a good effort.
I've been too scared for the last 2 weeks to even say that I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Out of like jinxing myself and getting like a late bout. Because of what I witnessed with Jade. It was not pretty. That's my wife. That was not good. That was not good.
Yes.
So, does it get better, Si, as the kids get older
and
they
go
to school?
Does it get better?
100%, yeah. The gastro is the gift that keeps on giving and giving and giving. And it is, I mean, it's the classic. We wash hands. We don't share any utensils. There's just no towel share, everything. We go into full,
mode
of, we just don't want everyone to get it. And we're pretty good when you got twin babies at 10 months old that are just going for it, it's awful.
That's what you need. I think that's what you're lacking, Tim. You're lacking policies and procedures at home for lockdown mode. It's like, all right, get the manual out. All right, if vomiting, do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wash towels, wash sheets.
Yeah.
Separate entirely.
Yeah. No, we do need some more manuals. You're right, Dan. It's just the problem is you just don't really have the energy or...
I can do it for you.
Really?
I'll write I know a lot about child rearing.
Yeah. Well, feel free. Please write them up for me.
I'll write them up.
Yeah, I think we're going to need more.
If you'd like them, write in to Drunk Podcast.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our main topic then. We've been chatting way too long here. We've been yapping away. Let's get into our main topic, which is our conversation with you, Si, about Begxiting. And that's exiting your business.
Business exit.
Yeah, do you like I've now turned it into a doing word. It's a verb.
Begxiting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Si, you and I were talking recently and you were telling me about a program essentially that you help business owners run through to prepare their business for exit. And I found that very interesting because I think, you know, we're talking about aging population.
Yep.
But even just, you know, it's this is about anyone in business and winning the freedom they want because they may not sell their business, but it's allowing them to exit from the day-to-day functioning.
Yeah.
So.
And I think us as accountants and any accountants that are currently listening to this, the question we would normally receive from a client would be, how much tax am I going to owe if I sell my business or if I do this or do that? It's always about the CGT consequences and that's where your brain goes. But really, this conversation should be had long before you actually go to sell, because there's things you can be doing to increase the value of your business or whatever it is. So I'm keen to hear, you know, what your main points are here, Si, and you know, what you think people should be looking to do in preparation to exit.
Mm. Yeah. What's step number one from your perspective?
Well, look, let me go back 20 something years. I was running a business in Sydney and I got the phone call. And this is my whole story, right? I got the phone call from my biggest competitor, and it was his PA or EA, and she said, "Oh, John's in town next week. He wants to catch up with you." And of course, we were mortal enemies. He was in Victoria, I was in New South Wales, and I thought, "What on earth is he coming to? I don't know, what's he doing?" Because we'd stolen a couple of his clients, they're like big clients.
Even the fact he's just from Victoria, I mean, that's enough to be mortal enemies with someone, isn't it?
Yeah. So I literally got the Hoover out and started vacuuming and dusting the business because I wanted to make it look nice when he came through, and I thought, what am I going to do? I'm ringing accountants. I'm trying to put forecasts together. I'm trying to, you know, build some sort of information memorandum, which I now know what it is. I didn't at the time, because I was about building and running and doing. I wasn't about selling.
Mm-hmm.
And we then spent the better part of 8 or 9 months completely distracted in all sorts of due diligence and all sorts of reports and interviews with staff. It just went on and on and on. And we finally sold for I'm thinking a fraction of what we should have got for it if we'd done the right work.
Wow. But and that was to the competitor.
Like, just get me out. Just I'm over it. And I was almost like, I'm willing to take anything for this thing, because just get me out. I'm done.
Wow.
Because you get excited. This is typically a once in a lifetime. It's a small lotto win.
Mm.
We don't do it every day. And there was no process, no nothing in place. So I went through that and I thought, I'm just not going to let anyone do that ever again.
Mm.
So it's like when you build a business, you would when you build a house, you'd never build it without an exit.
Yeah.
So when you build a business without, or a building without an exit, what do we call that? A jail.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
So virtually no one builds their business with exit in mind. And it may seem weird, but why do we have insurance in case things go wrong? Why do we build an exit plan in case the time's right, we do get that phone call?
Mm.
Yeah.
Very true. But
receiving a 17-page checklist of due diligence information, it took us literally 7 months to negotiate and fight around. I thought, why would I wait for someone to do the due diligence on me? Why wouldn't I do it on myself first? Mm. So it's like when you put your house up for sale, you run around, you paint this, you fix the fence, you do the gardens, you know, all the things, and you get there and you go, why didn't I do this years ago?
Yeah, I could have lived in a really nice house for the last several years.
I should have done years ago.
That's always bemused me, that one. Yeah, the little reno before you sell. Mm. Like, why didn't you do that and enjoy it for a couple of years and then sell?
Exactly. And a vast majority, 70%+ of people we take through this program, they get to the end. Their business is highly saleable. They're producing, you know, X percent NP there. They're doing it 4 days a week because they actually like being there, not because they have to be there.
Mm.
And I'll say, right, sale date's closing. What's happening is, I'm reconsidering the whole sale process. Why would I sell that?
Yeah.
Why?
Mm. Definitely. No, it's that's what you want in a business, really. It's something so good that you wouldn't let go of it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't sell it unless you were given the Godfather offer.
Yeah, unless someone reversed a dump truck worth of cash, and specifically cash in your guys' case, up the driveway, then you don't want to sell it. That's what you want it. You want it to be good.
Yeah, rather than most people, and I can relate to this from time to time, you know, it's been a tough couple of years during COVID, most people resenting their business. You're like, oh, what am I doing? Like,
I am so lonely.
I was thinking about the "Hello, Darkness, My Old Friend." So, give us a bit of an insight into what the process looks like. Are there some low-hanging fruit that a business owner could attack first?
Yeah, look, I think I've got kind of six main areas that we focus on first off. And the first one involves accountants and bookkeepers heavily because we want to make sure the numbers are solid.
Yeah.
And we need, ultimately, you need 3 years of consistent information. So, margins, pricing, anything to do with cash flow forecasts, dashboards.
Yep.
Because I need to, most businesses measure lag indicators.
Yeah.
So the P&L, for example, is a lag indicator. They're not measuring, you know, how many leads we got this week. What was our conversion rate on those leads? You know, so they're not measuring those fundamental numbers.
Yeah.
And when you get a dashboard in front of a client, it's like a pilot with all the dials in front of him or her.
Hmm.
And if they don't have the dashboard, imagine all those being taped up. You'd have to look out the window or your bank balance to see how well you were traveling, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you deal with this stuff all day long, but dashboards are phenomenal. When you get them up and running and you're measuring lead indicators, the whole business starts to turn around.
We have dashboards, which were set up for us by Dashboard Insights.
Yeah. Little shout out to them. Dashboard Insights.
And they've been awesome. They've been really awesome. And you've got to position them in the right way. But particularly for us, we are a service industry. So a leading indicator for us is the amount of time our team are working on client work that could be billed out. And that happens way before we send someone an invoice.
Yeah.
So it really drives performance. It gives visibility. I definitely am very happy with it. And I don't sit there every hour and look at it, but it's nice. I check at least once a month. So yeah, I totally agree, Si. The dashboard can be overlooked. I feel like it was in vogue a few years ago and we've all just gone, nah.
Well, I think for and something that we noticed when we started our business advisory journey with people is dashboards without context or without education or without accountability become sort of pointless for a lot of small business owners because they don't know what they're looking at.
Yeah.
But when you have a dashboard and you know what you're trying to achieve and it's just about measuring that and checking on that, then that's a very powerful tool. I agree.
The simple things like pricing structures. You ask someone, how do you come up with your pricing? Oh, well, we know what the industry is doing. We've our nearest competitors, we're pretty much the same.
Mm.
So that means your pricing based upon what you think their business model is. You got no idea what they're doing over there.
Mm.
You got no idea of their efficiency or billable hours or whatever it is. You got no idea.
Mm.
So is it cost plus? Is it, when was the last time you looked at it? Because I don't know about you, but costs are creeping every single day.
Oh, yeah.
So unless you're doing a price review every 3 months, you're going to get caught short. And we call that margin squeeze.
Yep.
So you're working closely with accountant and bookkeeper, whether it's the husband or wife or the auntie or whoever's doing their books, making sure that they're on top of it. So that'd be the first thing, is getting the financial universe kind of cleaned up.
I like that a lot. And that's a system in and of itself. So yeah, system number one, financial.
I like it.
Yeah, like, you know, and then also there's other non-financial numbers, like we mentioned,
leads,
the billable hours is a financial number, but to me there's probably five or six core numbers that you really want to be across. And I say to my founders, if you were on a beautiful tropical island with your partner and you got a text message every day, there was no words, there were just numbers, what were the five numbers that you'd want to see every single day just so you know that everything was going okay?
Definitely.
Like Maccas, love them or hate them, 600 pairs of feet across the door threshold and they start making money. 600 pairs of feet or wheels through the drive-through and they start making, that's a good number to know, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I love the break-even concept. What day in the month do we break even?
Yeah.
How hard do I work for the next 11 days? Because I'm in profit country right now. Right? Robert Kiyosaki was mentioning yesterday that most of the PIG world work for till the 14th of May for the government. The rest of it's theirs. So from January through May, they're working for the government to pay their taxes. Same, well, every month we work for covering the cost in our businesses. So imagine knowing the day that you break even each month and what we do, let's go hard from there. So yeah, no, all sorts of numbers. The second part, and again, this is not necessarily in chronological order, based upon where the life cycle of the business, the nous of the business owner you're dealing with, the founder, you know, where their business acumen's at, they're all critical. But the second area I love to focus on is people and culture. Have we got the right people doing the right job? Do they carry some numbers that are important to me? Are they carrying some of my five numbers? Culture is ridiculously important. And let me give you the analogy, right? I don't know. You guys follow rugby, I assume. No. Who's the winningest team on the planet? Internationally, who's the winningest team on the planet?
The Wallabies.
No.
It's the All Blacks. It's the All Blacks.
So 120-something years with a win-loss ratio of 73.2% or something. It's insane.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And then throw in there the population versus all the other countries around the world.
They're drawing from now 5.1, 5.2 million. And how do they do that?
Their
players are not bigger, stronger, faster. It's just, it's all to do with culture. You can look up on the internet, you can look up the All Blacks 15 points of culture, and number six says we have a no dickhead policy.
Yeah.
That's one of their points of culture, right?
What was the book that was written about the All Blacks? There was a book.
A great book.
I forgot the name of it, but it was about their culture and why they win and everyone cleans the locker room and all that stuff.
Sick.
So you having a phenomenal culture versus a disabled culture. In a disabled culture, if the phone rings at 3 minutes to five, the person goes, I'm going, I'll let it go to voicemail, I don't care. In a great culture, you're tapping into the discretionary effort that lies dormant. The secret sauce. So if I've got the right people doing the right job in the right seat with the right number, and they're on the same page with me, right? They're culturally well aligned.
Yeah.
I'm going to outperform everybody else.
Yeah, very true.
52% of mergers work, 48% don't, and the vast majority of acquisitions mergers fail because of the cultural misalignment.
Wow.
It's an awful number to know.
That's half. It's literally a flip of the coin.
Correct.
Yeah, it's huge. We've Dan and I harp on all the time about purpose and values, which we like to refer. The values are like your vibes, your business vibes. So yeah, I totally agree. I mean, selling a business without defining your values is going to be a massive risk. And it's going to be a lot harder to sell because the person buying won't necessarily be able to know what they're going to be walking into in terms of culture.
Yep.
And then don't overlook the fact of performance, like you said. So if you can define the values and the purpose and get everyone on board with those, then the performance can go through the roof. And I think like we've experienced that too since we defined our values, and for various reasons, not just because of the values we set, but... There's been a couple of people leave our business that maybe, you know, didn't see fit with all of the values. And it was a very painful experience to lose those people. But I've got to say, it's been one of the biggest positives ever, really, because I feel like the culture's back where it needs to be.
Catalysts for change. They've made us identify areas that we aren't living to those culture, those vibes that we've set, which has been really great. So, I agree. This is good. Second point, people and culture.
If you look at this through the lens of a buyer, right, they're doing the walk around. You've invited them in. We're at that stage where, you know, we're comfortable. We've got NDAs all covered. They're looking beneath the surface. They're looking for the mojo of the business. They subtle, unspoken way people treat each other in reception. And they will smell that straight away. Where's that on your due diligence checklist? It's nowhere. It's nowhere in the list whatsoever. But savvy business owners are buyers are looking for all those subtle things that sit below the surface, right?
Yeah, very true.
All right, what's point three?
This is almost a guide on how to buy a good business too, actually, if you flip it in reverse. Right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. The third, again, not necessarily in order, but the third one of the third areas is our marketing. How does this business find business? How does it find clients? Mm-hmm. What does it do?
Yep.
How do we generate leads? What niche are we playing in? Do we have an ideal client experience in place? How are our socials doing? How does the market see us? What's our message?
Mm.
And how do we differentiate ourselves from everyone else doing the same stuff that we do? Yeah. What makes us different?
That's a big
one.
That's
a huge part.
In Fix This Next, have you read that book, Si?
No.
Yeah, it's a really good one by Mike Michalowski. Mm. Did I say that right?
Mike Motorbike.
Mike Motorbike.
Oh, Mike, what did he write?
Profit First.
Mike Motorbike.
And his number one thing to fix, generate leads.
Mm.
He said, fix this first, leads, lead generation. Yep. And he's got a point, because if you're generating a lot of leads, then you've got the ability to be able to test things out, to be able to increase the value of what you're doing, and convert better leads. So I think, and probably you think of most small businesses, it relies too much on just that owner, the name or that reputation of what the owner does.
Yeah.
And then...
Which is, we've always been advocates of don't name the business after yourself.
Yeah, don't...
Or unless you've got a really cool name is my caveat to that. Then you can. But don't call it Osborne and Garth Accounting Firm.
Yeah.
Because Osborne and Garth might not be there in 20 years. And who is it then?
That's right. Yeah. So, that's a good one. It's always a challenging thing to generate more leads. Where there's a will, there's a way. And you could brainstorm 100 ideas to generate more leads that aren't just you going out to a networking event or your name and people knowing your reputation. So,
well, there's four forces that drive all buyer behavior. On the negative side, it's fears and frustrations.
Mm.
On the positive side, it's wants and aspirations. And when you do the deep work I'll take clients for half a day on this one subject. I need to get under the skin of why my people buy from me.
That's cool.
Why do they do that? And if I can truly understand their wants, fears, frustrations, aspirations, I can design marketing that really, really gets under the skin on that exact issue.
That's cool.
I think that's a really, cool. really good point. But you've also just given me an idea by accident. You said the word deep work, which reminded me of the book Deep Work, which then made me think we should have like a button that like when a code word is said, we like push the button. It's like people can play a drinking game when they listen to the podcast if they want.
True.
It's like, oh, deep work. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Have a sip.
Yeah, true. That's a good call.
Anyway, this is a...
That is super interesting. I totally agree. That's like makes me think of that whole building an avatar of your ideal client.
Yeah.
And really getting inside their head and figuring out what makes them tick. Yes, that is so true.
Yep.
And it sort of simplifies it.
One of our avatars is females between 35 and 45 for my business specifically. And we did the deep work on the fears and frustrations they have. And often... female entrepreneurs are torn between the family and the business. Absolutely torn. And I know for a fact when they walk onto the schoolyard with their kids for school drop-off, I know that the other mothers are daggering them in the back. Oh, she does care. Do you know what I mean? So I can talk about mother guilt in my marketing, for example, and tweak away at that one. And that's something that elicits people to pick up the phone or click on the link or do whatever, watch the video. So
that's really good.
The deep work.
All right. What's number four?
I like that.
Sales.
Sales.
Yeah.
So Robert Kiyosaki yesterday mentioned that the number one skill of every entrepreneur is the ability to sell. Mm. If you ain't got that, you're in trouble. So it's the conversion process. If you've got a lead, now what are you going to do with it? I've designed a thing called the sales pathway, and it takes you from first inquiry, whether it be web, walk-in, phone, email, whatever it is, and you take each one of those and you look at the micro steps that happen in between to design the ideal mechanism flow chart for that person to hit the sale.
Yeah.
And every little time it's a yes or a no. What does the no mean? How do I deal with that?
Yeah,
like a Bible, like a sales Bible, essentially.
Yeah. It's the client journey from inquiry to sale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best advice.
And if you understand the client journey. If you understand that client journey, and so you've got the right fish on the hook, the right avatar sitting there, how do I make sure that I do everything possible to ensure that I become a client?
Yes.
Yeah, rather than winging it, or everyone does it differently in the business, or I was brought into an insurance agency with 18 sales reps. One of them was just way off the charts good. They said, "We want to increase our revenue." So I said, "Great, show me the number one sales guy." Mm. So I followed him for a couple of days, and I'd watched what he did. And even the letterhead, he used different stock in the printer. Rather than 85 gram, he was at 120 gram stock in the printer. He just did this. So we copied the process, and we lifted sales. Yeah?
Wow. Yeah.
So that sales process is for me.
Because that could even come down to, like you said, the font in your email, the clothing you wear, the words you use when you talk or print into your email. So, there's a lot of subconscious stuff happening there in that sales journey.
It's like testimonials. It's like a pre-warned kind of, you know, here's what to expect on the day when you arrive kind of thing. There's a video. There's so much we can do because our clients are getting younger. We're not.
Mm.
And our clients consume information in sales processes differently to what they did 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah, true.
So, yeah, it's also adapting and adopting to what's current.
Yeah. Yep. That's huge. That's a massive one.
Yeah. I like that.
Cool.
Number five.
Yeah, I know you were going to say number five. this is kind of an overarching one, but how do I systemize the daylights out of my business?
Mm.
Yep.
It's the 80-20 rule. 80% of what I do every day is repetitive. How do I get that in a way that's documented, that's videoed, that's screen captured, that's loomed, and how do I put that into a mechanism that enables the right people in the team to see that information?
Yeah.
So if I've got kitchen staff versus, you know, front of house staff, I don't need them to see all the same information. Mm. So there's wonderful apps that capture all this stuff these days, but I'm a huge fan of video. Again, our younger generation consume video. They're not going to read your system. They're not going to read your type process step one, step two. They'll skip straight to the end to get to the end part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very true. Yeah. Very true.
So,
yeah.
And systems free the founder up from doing everything.
Mm. What's the e-myth?
The e-myth. That was the e-myth, yes. Yep. It was the hotel he stays at.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lovely place on near the Big Sur, California. And it's so true. Yeah. Mm. Every person in your business knows exactly what they need to do every day.
And how to do it.
And how to do it.
And you could train other people easily to do the same thing.
That's right. That means that you could almost hire anyone as long as they fit the values and they have the right attitude, then you could almost hire anyone to do the job.
Yeah, highly systemized businesses have a lower wage cost percentage than those that are not systemized. Because I'm hiring now as opposed to hiring a person with the right attitude and willingness to follow my system. I can pay them less and still produce a predictable result. Because humans, we love predictability. Yeah. We just love it.
I know I do.
Yeah, like how Dan predictably slices his drive every time.
That's why I aim left.
I could fix that in 5 minutes for you.
Better people have tried, Si. Better people have tried.
I keep telling you. You just need a video of your swing. You're a smart guy, Dan. You'll fix your mechanics.
Yeah. I will.
You're an astrophysicist.
I just don't play enough.
The crowning point, and this is chronological, is once we've got all of that done, opportunities start to pop up. Can I franchise it? Can I license it? Can I bring an employee share plan? Can I sell it, right, because it's now ready for sale? Can I JV with someone? Can I go and acquire other people because I can rinse and repeat what I've done here?
Wow.
So, yeah, the business model starts to come. Employee share plans can pop up here as well. Because I want to lock in a good way my right people. Mm. And we had a project management company up in Sydney. We had 5 core project managers. None of them were shareholders. And at any stage, they could have left because we'd trained them to the hilt. Mm. We put an employee share plan in. The business was valued at, 2.8, I think, before. We sold it for 11. 4 years later. Yeah, because we had just the fact that we had 5 core shareholders meant the business was solid.
Yeah.
And when you've got shareholders in there, it's like the difference between driving your own car versus a rental.
Yes.
You know, you treat the thing differently.
Definitely.
So, yeah, that's the – and we work with accounting firms to make that happen too. So
it's really cool. Yeah, because there's a lot of obviously key functions that the accountant can play along that way.
Yep.
So yeah, but this is awesome, and it's a really good reminder. Like, anyone who's in business has had thoughts about all of these things, I'm sure, at different times. And overwhelmingly, sometimes all at the same time, you're like, oh God, I need to generate more leads and have a better sales process and improve my culture.
Been there.
And build a dashboard while I'm at it. But yeah, I think...
Well, I guess the beauty of it is that I sit with the clients every single quarter and we design the next 90 days together.
Mm.
What are the 3 core rocks that we need to knock over in the next... Not 10, not 15, not 2, just 3. Just 3 different rocks that we need to knock over. Is it the website redesign because, you know, it's shit ass and we're not, it's not that good and we need to deliver some better leads. It's not converting.
Yeah.
Do we need to train our sales team on the fundamentals? Hell, we went to rejig. We spent X $1,000s a month, but we're not getting the return. Right. Let's cut that completely and redesign it from scratch. So, you know, they're, some of them are big projects and some of them aren't. So that if you just knock every 90 days, you're knocking 3 or 4 things off that list. Within 12 months or so, you've got a completely different looking business.
All right, Simon, I'm going to throw a spanner at you. What if the business owner is like, I don't have time for any of that. How could I possibly improve my sales process or generate more leads?
I'm up at 6.
Build a dashboard or even look at my dashboard.
I get home at 8. I got no time for the kids.
Yeah. I don't. What do you say to that?
I would say that they don't understand the concept of leverage.
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking a lot about this. This is a great point that you've brought this up. Continue. I want to hear your thoughts.
So I think the fundamental role of every founder is the never-ending seeking of leverage.
Yep.
Mm.
Yep. I mean, we've leveraged with our staff. We've leveraged with our marketing sales systems. I mean, the chair you're sitting on right now is giving you leverage off your legs, right? It's everywhere. Leverage is everywhere. Mm. We just don't see it. So day to day, we do what we've always done. We hope for different results. Never going to happen. We have to change some stuff.
Mm.
I just got off a call with a founder this morning out west. And he's a 100-hour a week man. I was there. I used to do 100 hours a week. I've been there. I've done it. And by carving stuff up, here's the big one, under delegation.
Mm.
Under delegation, 30 to 40% of what a founder does, and I know these stats, I've done them, 30 to 40% of what founders do is under delegated. If they got rid of that stuff because they don't have the right people, they haven't got the right training, they haven't got the right systems.
Mm.
So yeah, you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of, you know, how do I design my perfect week? What am I doing that someone else, if I were trained and quality controlled, be able to do for me?
Yeah.
Okay. So we look at their to-do list and we start delegating really, really fast.
Yeah.
And when they start freeing up a bit of time, they still look for more things to do because they're in that hyper-vigilant mode.
Yep.
I can relate to that. Yeah.
Yep. Some days, after a particularly busy period, some days I do come in and I have like still a full day worth of stuff, but I'm like, oh God, I got so much to do. It's like, actually, no, I can get through this fine. Yeah. This is not a problem.
Imagine if you had some horrible health issue and you had to spend an hour a day sitting in a chair getting something.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to die. You'd find the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all... I'm busy is just an excuse, right? We just haven't figured out the way to not be busy.
I do have a horrible health condition. I am dying. We're all dying, actually. All of us. Right. All the time.
This is the second time in the past 2 weeks, though, I've heard that being busy is a choice.
Yeah.
Like
it's a little internal voice.
Not having enough time is a choice. Mm. You're just not delegating.
Sometimes we get significance. We receive significance by being that busy person.
Mm-hmm.
You're sitting with someone, their phone rings and go, oh,
Yeah.
That's just their way of saying I'm needed. My business needs me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I like this. So these are all
huge,
great things to think about when selling your business, but also when buying a business, and some things to look for there. So have you got any final words on the matter before we move on?
Yeah, look, I think I would say that if you really started thinking about it, you want to allocate 5 years to get this right.
Wow.
The renovation stage is probably the hardest part. So 2 years to renovate and get it really to the point. But then you need, once you've changed all the strategies and moved the systems and got the right people in place, you need 3 years of consistent results.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's 5 years. So the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time was today. it's so the true. Same deal, right? The same deal. There's never a good time to do this because we're all busy, but you don't want to wait till that phone call comes. You get that phone call, it makes me feel sick thinking about it.
Yeah. Yep.
But be ready.
Great advice. Ready.
That is huge. And also, in a way, you could take that the other way. If you're on this journey and you've been trying to do this for 3 or 4 years,
you're probably
keep going
the way through. Yeah.
You're just doing the average amount of time it takes to renovate a business and get it to the point where it's systemized and can function without you. Just, you're going to get distracted at times and you're going to go off the path, but keep coming back onto the path.
Makes me feel better, Tim.
It does. I feel so much lighter.
Thanks, Si. We appreciate that.
I'll leave you one last thought. Companies are not bought. Companies are sold.
Ooh. Ooh.
That's cool.
Profound. Yeah.
So this is getting on the front foot and doing the sale rather than waiting for the phone call.
So true.
Because if you wait, it's going to be too late, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you're like, I need to sell my business. Where do you start?
Yeah.
Where do you start? Literally.
Wow. Great stuff.
I love that.
Great stuff.
We're going to summarize this in show notes as well for everyone. So it'll be available on our website.
Yeah.
Let's awesome takeaways.
Let's finish the main topic there. Move on to our other things before we wrap up. Tim, do you have another thing?
I do have another thing. I started watching a bit of a throwback. I started watching 30 Rock.
Good show.
Great show.
Tina Fey, very funny.
So good. Yeah. Like, my favorite character in it is Kenneth the Page.
Yeah, he's good.
Yes, sir. I just want to bring Kenneth's his energy. Mm. I want to bring his energy to like everything in my life, essentially. It's so good. He doesn't care that he's like got the lowest job and the people just throw their crap at him. And he just loves it. He's like, this is what TV is amazing. So it's so funny. Yeah, that's mine. Very good show.
Good one.
What about you guys? Anything you've been consuming recently?
Lots of things. I
not just cookies, Dan.
No, I'm off the cookies apart from these ones I literally just ate.
Just ate a bag of Scotch fingers,
and they were good. They were good. My other thing this week is I've started rewatching a couple of shows. One of them was Schitt's Creek. Rewatched that. Love that.
Yeah, that's a great show.
So funny.
Yeah.
Every time I watch it, it's funny.
Yeah, it is good.
I'm going to start watching Ted Lasso. I watched the first one last night. And just good. Just feel good.
Do you know, this completely relates to 30 Rock.
Okay.
Do you know he was in...
Jason Sudeikis?
Jason Sudeikis was just like a extra character in an episode recently of 30 Rock.
Yeah, right.
And he was literally Ted Lasso. He comes in, he's got the southern accent. And he's like, oh, I was just here dropping something in for my wife. It's hilarious. It is him without the mo.
That's funny.
And about 10 years younger.
What do you think I'd look like with the mo? I mean, I actually...
Good.
We have the picture, actually. I have dressed up as Ted Lasso for an event.
Yeah.
That you were at, the ping pong night.
I think you pulled it off. Yeah. And you won that ping pong night as well, so...
Yeah, it was my
Can't
power.
Can't be too bad.
It was my power.
Can't be too bad, right? You had the belief.
Yeah. Si, what's your other thing this week?
Strangely enough, I think I've just found 2 hours of your life every day.
In my defense, I thought I was coming down with gastro that day when I was watching 30 Rock.
You need time to relax.
My extra would be I've been studying celery juice.
Ooh, Okay.
Miracle healing powers of celery juice.
I think I've just found at least an hour of your day back, Si.
That would be while I'm riding my bike on the trainer, listening to the,
right, yeah.
6:30 and 7.
So it's
quite incredible. There's a wonderful book called the Medical Medium Celery.
Wow. Okay.
And it's all about what the undiscovered or actually recently discovered health benefits of drinking celery. And because it's not patentable or the big farmers can't play with it, no one wants to know about it. So it really is quite incredible.
Interesting. Wow. We should do a deep dive on celery.
We should do a deep dive on celery. That's fascinating. Mm. I have an old slow pressing juicer at home, and that's just inspired me to actually go buy some celery and use it. So what do you do?
Nothing. Cold pressed juice, celery, ice, no water, nothing.
Yeah. And are we talking a shot glass a day, shot glass with every meal?
We're talking about 500 mils once a day.
Okay.
Seems like a lot of celery.
You do that for a month or so, then you can wean off to a glass a day or, 300 mils a day instead of 500 or 600.
I want to try this.
So have you been doing this, Si?
Yeah.
Feeling the difference?
I think I'm about to go 60 this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I played a lot of basketball at the National League level for many years and have shit-ass knees and hips, and my knees ache. Have been aching for quite some time.
Mm.
I've been on celery juice for about a month now, and I'm finding them to be things aren't aching like they used to.
Wow.
Interesting.
It's hard to put a solid finger on it, but if I'm looking back, things aren't quite so achy.
Mm.
And it reduces inflammation, which is, arthritic. Those are all the things that cause arthritis and so on. I cannot tell you. There's a whole chapter 3 goes through all of the things it deals with and why. They're called sodium clusters. I don't know what that means, but salt and the human body are actually a very good mix.
Yeah,
the salt enables the fluids to travel into the cell. So if you drink water and constantly have to go to the toilet, that means it's like watering a pot plant. It hasn't been watered for months. It just rolls off the top. The salt enables the liquid to get into the cell. So you don't have to drink as much, but what you drink stays in.
That's sort of it sort of has the opposite effect. When you're drinking all that water, it actually removes the minerals from your body. So, do you buy organic celery?
You're correct.
Yeah. You'd want to keep it organic. If you're going to be
about $10 a bunch, it's not cheap.
Yeah. Yeah.
But $10 a bunch. And otherwise you're dealing with pesticides and herbicides and all sorts of stuff you don't necessarily want. And the difference is you've got this wonderful, firm, strong, long, beautiful-looking bunch versus something that's a little bit squiggly, but it hasn't had the hormonal treatment, if you like, of the other bunch. So, 100% organic.
I really love the idea that when things are going well or you're feeling okay or you want to improve your... I'm going to buy organic celery. We're going to make all these things. It needs to all be organic. I don't care what it costs. It's fine. When you got gastro, I'm buying a pop top and freezing it.
I know. It all goes out the door pretty quick. Yeah. you look at that $10 bunch of celery, Si, and you're like, that's pretty expensive celery. Mm. I don't know. I would think I'd prefer the $5 bunch. You go out to a bar, you buy one beer for $15.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat.
And it's a good point.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So, we need to change the way we perceive value on some foods and nutrients.
Yep.
That's a good one. Yeah. I actually heard a really – this. I won't go on about this for ages, but it relates to business. That drug, that wonder drug for diabetes, I forget what it's called, but it's been produced by a Norwegian or Danish company. It'd be interesting to look at that because it's actually – you talked about Big Pharma before, Si. It's a drug they developed for diabetes, but it's inadvertently stopping hunger, essentially. So people are losing all this weight when they take this drug.
That's the one that all the celebrities and things...
Everyone's on it. And it's literally the GDP growth in Norway or Denmark. I don't know the country. It's one of those two. The GDP growth of the last 12 months was all due to this pharmaceutical company. And it's changing the way that other pharma companies... business models are working because they have drugs for hypertension. that is as a result of being overweight.
we should start a pharma company. You got experience in that?
No. Okay. Absolutely none.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
But it's even affecting like business models like McDonald's, like fast food, because people aren't hungry anymore. So in America, it's having massive, massive changes to all these business models just because people are eating less.
Love that stuff.
Fascinating.
So fascinating.
It's fascinating.
All right. Well, Sai, if people want to find you, how can they get in touch?
TheExit.coach.
TheExit.coach. Nice. Cool. Use of dot coach just, in your domain there.
Yeah, but it's just T-H-E-X-I-T. So one of the E's is already exited, right?
Yeah. Yes. Nice. Nice.
Vexit.
Yeah.
It's like Vexit.
Yeah.
Vexit.
Vexit.
Yeah.
Exit.coach.
Awesome. Yeah. So TheExit.coach. So make sure you go there if you want some more information about Sai and everything that he's gone through today and the program that he runs. If you want more information from us, all the usual spots, Two Drunk Accountants and all the socials, twodrunkpodcast@gmail.com, twodrunkaccountants.com.au to visit our website. We're going to be at the ABE next week.
Yes.
So we're going to be doing two live podcasts, one at 3:30 in one of the theaters on day one, and on day two, I think we're at 11 o'clock. We're hoping day one might get a little bit loose and fun. So
we're hoping to put on some drinks on day one. It is the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a long accounting conference.
Yeah,
so
we're waiting to hear back on this. If you're listening, ABE, I'm waiting your reply on the email, please, on this one.
If there's not drinks, then we'll be bringing all the merch too. So
we'll bring in all the merch. There'll be some fun. There'll be some games. There'll be some laughter. And there'll be some solid nuggets of knowledge.
Yes, we are buying our audience.
Exactly.
We are buying our audience off. But
shamelessly.
Shamelessly.
We'll be there next week. And I guess we'll speak to you then.
All right.
Calculator.
Thanks, sir.
Bye.